Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the FT's weekly podcast tour of the world's biggest and most liquid market. I'm Michael Hunter, and with me this week is Hans Redeker, Global Head of Foreign Exchange Strategy at Morgan Stanley. Hans, you're very welcome. This week, I think we must start taking a look at central banks again, and first, of course, the implications for the dollar of the musings of the Federal Reserve. The US currency weakened as the statement from the Fed was passed by the market this week. While policymakers sought to keep the door open to a September rate rise, the currency market doesn't seem to be convinced. Hans, what did you think of the reaction, and what did you think of what Janet Yellen told the markets?
So I think the reaction was textbook-like. What we have seen in the past couple of weeks was that US real yields rose by about 15 basis points. This rise in real yields was based on the assumption that the Fed would position itself a little bit more ahead of the curve. Of course, the statement had been more hawkish than when compared to the previous statement, but we interpreted that the Fed was cutting off tail risk. But the Fed has not shown any intention to hike rates in a hurry. And that actually implies that real yields are not going to stay at this level. Real yields could fall back, and that is the reason why the US dollar has come under selling pressure.
Do you think when Janet Yellen was basically pointing to a kind of gradual outlook for UK rate rises, that should have come perhaps as such a surprise?
No, I think that the gradualism is just going to stay with the Fed. And of course, they want to get rates higher, but they are not going to take unnecessary risk. What you have to consider is that this is a tightening process in the United States where corporate profitability relative to GDP has already peaked 1.5 years ago. You see that corporate leverage is currently running at about 47% of income. So that are quite high levels for a situation where the Fed is starting to hike interest rates. And that actually implies as well vulnerabilities. So this is about financial conditions. Can you keep financial conditions stable as you tighten? And that, I guess, can only happen if the Fed is sailing behind the curve, is not front-loading it. And again, this comes back to real yields. And I think that real yields in the United States are on the way back, and that is going to put the US dollar under selling pressure.
And before we have a look at some of the other central bank implications, particularly towards the UK, if we just stay with the US for a moment. We're seeing record highs on the S&P 500. We're also seeing very low sovereign bond yields at the same time. Those two markets moving unusually in lockstep in that pattern. How big a consideration are those kind of anomalies, do you think, for the Federal Reserve?
The Fed has always to look at matters from a financial condition point of view. And of course, equity stability in other marketplaces is liked by the Fed, but the Fed has as well to recognize that currently high valuations are imposing risk. And we have to take this financial market development as well in the context of other signals, which are quite disturbing. So you see that the yield curve is flattening. Isn't this a late cycle thing? What we are seeing too is that despite economic surprise in the United States, reaching multiple year highs, you see that inflation expectations are not doing likewise. Inflation expectations recently have come back. And then you have oil prices declining and commodities are starting to correct lower, which is not boding well for inflation expectations either. So the point I'm making here is that the Fed is definitely not going to put itself at risk when you have deflationary pressures at work. Now the question is, from where does it come from? Because the US labor market is relatively tight. You would argue from a Phillips curve perspective that wages would go up in the United States. But we have to take that as well in a global context. And the global context is that globally we have huge overcapacities. We have globally huge debt levels. We have low return of investment. And that, I guess, is going to keep inflation expectations low, deflationary pressures in place, and the Fed, therefore, in a relative benign mood.
And it's not just the Fed, is it? We are definitely going to come to the Bank of England next, but there's a danger in some ways, perhaps, Hans, I don't know if, to what extent you agree with this, that central bankers are in danger of, to quote a line from Mary Poppins, of all places, waiting for everything to be practically perfect in every way before they act. And there's this very complicated picture which we're presented with on the markets and with economic data which you outline. Is there ever going to be a time where there's a sufficient lack of risk for them to take a bold move or to keep up with what's going on? How worried are you that we're never really going to have the kind of clarity out there that they seem to be waiting for before they act?
So what we have seen over the past, say, 20, 25 years is central bank policies which were asset price protective. People have been talking about central bank puts for very long, and the result of that is that we have a lot of relatively low-yielding assets or low-return assets. So in the olden days, you would have depreciated your assets, you would have reallocated the proceeds into better-performing investments. All that has not happened. And that actually means that we are becoming more dependent on very easy monetary policy. So the question is, which central bank wanted to break that knot? Which central banker wanted to be responsible for potentially a significant decline in asset values? And I think that listening to conversations of central bankers, they talk about social responsibilities. They're talking about that a severe shock into the economy would have social economic implications, and they are not willing to take that. Bernanke was saying that. So under those circumstances, you have a central bank which is very cautious and is allowing real yields to come off, and that has implications on the foreign exchange. In this case, the US dollar is likely to decline. By how much? Well, we think in trade-weighted terms, measured on the broad dollar index of the Fed, it should be about 5% from current levels.
Interesting. And meanwhile, of course, where once we were looking to the Bank of England and anticipating a rate increase as the UK economic recovery took deeper hold after Brexit, we're now looking at the Bank of England and expecting, maybe as soon as next week, another cut. What are your thoughts on the Bank of England and the kind of knots that it has to unpick now?
The UK has exposed itself to a shock. And the exit of out of Europe, out of the common market, is not going to be an easy exercise. So in the worst case, you can drop back to conditions of the World Trade Agreement. Now the question is, how do you soften that? So you need to have a supply-oriented policy. So that means you consider to cut corporate taxes. You may as well impose an FX level, a sterling level, which is putting sterling at so undervalued level that you have an investment from abroad coming in. So that foreign investors are going to find a lot of value into the UK and would do so to invest into the UK, even so there is a framework uncertainty. And I guess that is the right strategy to do. So there are, of course, conditions to consider. And these conditions are that we have a current account deficit in this country of 7%. And that actually means if you put too much weakness into the currency, you can create volatility on assets because these assets are held by foreigners. But what we have seen so far is that sterling had declined in good terms. So gilt yields had been lower, the FTSE is now higher, and so forth. So that actually means that the central bank can really consider another move of the exchange rate lower and impose a monetary policy strategy which would allow sterling to decline.
And of course, we've even seen the FTSE 250 recover the levels it had at the close of business on polling day this week, at least in sterling terms, if not in euro and dollar terms, of course, after sterling slide. Very quick nod to the actual numbers, I think, with the pound. It's, as we speak, trading again over 1.31 against the dollar. Do you think that that's looking like a floor, the 1.30 level? We tend to get some support for the pound around those levels. What do you think about that?
Well, that has a lot to do with the US dollar side, to be honest. What you have as well to consider is that it seems that euro sterling is pressing higher. So what I think is, because of our outlook on the US dollar side, you could as well get cable, as we call it, going up from current levels, maybe to 1.35, but that is a selling level. Why? Now, we made our calculation and said, what is a fair value for the UK or for sterling, recognizing its current account position? So how do you get rid of this current account down to a sustainable level? That gives you an exchange rate of 1.34 to 1.35. So you have as well to take into account a risk premium for the exit out of Europe. And that, I think, is about 10%, and that gives you 124 for cable. So I consider that at upper levels, sterling should be offered.
Okay. And finally, forecasts from Morgan Stanley out recently looked at a shallow recession for the UK on the economic basis. You cut your 2016 growth forecast from 1.7% to 1.2% for this current year, and for 2017 from 2.3% to 0.5%. To those people listening who are concerned about that kind of outlook, what would you say about the UK economy's medium-term prospects?
I guess that is well recognised that the economy is developing into a weak spot. We have seen all the soft indicators recently coming off quite significantly. And this forecast of a mild recession is as well taking into account our sterling forecast. So that actually means if you would have a higher sterling as an outcome of this for whatever reason, then potentially the recession in the UK would be bigger.
Hans Redeker, Global Head of Foreign Exchange Strategy at Morgan Stanley, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You can keep up with all the action on the world's currency markets throughout the week at ft.com/currencies and, of course, at FastFT.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy the FT's Banking Weekly. It's presented by me, Patrick Jenkins, the financial editor at the FT, and I'm joined by a team and an external guest every week. You can find this every Tuesday at ft.com/podcasts.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.